Good evening, this is Lesbian Nation. Tonight we're going to have an interview with the Gay Women of Carbondale, which I did last spring. Before that, however, we're going to have a short presentation by Mary Flowerpot.
Yes, hello out there. Martha introduced me as her helper last week, and naturally most of you were sensible enough not to be in New York on a holiday weekend. And so few got to hear that I was introduced under a rather strange name. I mean, well, you've all heard of Tokyo Rose, haven't you? Well, now you've got your very own living lesbian version, Mary Flowerpot. Yes, that's me, a pseudonym. Now, you may well think, what's all this garbage about? In fact, I have to tell you that one listener wrote in with a comment, which runs as follows. Well, of course, it's perfectly obvious that I'm working as a secret agent. The FBI naturally think I'm working as a double-cross spy for an unmentionable foreign power, namely, outer Afghanistan. In fact, as usual, they've got it all wrong. I'll let you into the real secret, as it closely concerns you all. In fact, I work as a triple agent using the quadruple cross system for an organisation known as GALP. Now, don't get around to telling everybody, but GALP, G-U-L-P, or Group for the Unification of Lesbians Peacefully. I mean, we're not into violence or nothing disgusting, though there may be a teeny bit of obscenity now and then, but we'll let you know. Now, if you'd like to work for this organisation too, just write me a postcard labelled Mary Flowerpot, GALP, WBAI, and wherever that is, just do it by the book. Now, no applications will be accepted unless there is a photostat copy of your big left toe print enclosed. We have to keep our records too, you know. Of course, you may just wish to send us a contribution, in which case 50 supermarket stamps entitle you to 2 weeks trial membership, and we'll take it from there. Now, let's get down to business. First of all, the theme tune. This week, Mary Flowerpot is broadcasting to you straight from the front line, namely the woodshed at the bottom of the garden, where it is reported that something nasty has been going on inside. At the potting shed. Let's get in a bit closer and listen.
I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat.
Well, something nasty is going on inside. Never mind. Empires come and go, but lesbians go on forever. Oh, I'm going to keep it together and move in now for a better look. I'm approaching the woodshed door now. It's 6'3", made of wood with knotty, rugged knots. Very knotty it is. It stands tall and wooden and overpowering. Shall I open it and see what lies on the other side? Gad, folks, it's dark inside. Yeah, I say, technician, play the dark record, will you, while I find my flashlight. Ah, here it is. Now, just a minute, I'll switch it on. There. Oh, good God, folks, look who it is. Look, it's Floria Bynum. Naked. I wonder what she's doing here. I'll ask her. Ms. Bynum, would you care to make a statement about your present condition of undress? Well, perhaps Perhaps we will go into more detail, Miss Bynum, at a more convenient time, as they say. That seems to sum it up for this week. Next week, listen in to further exciting instalments from Mary Flowerpot in the Wooding... Mary Potting... Well, Mary Down Yonder anyway. And if you have any great sounds you think other listeners might like to hear, because that's what we're into, give us a call. And who knows, we may call back.
If you're free any time during the next week, I'd like to strongly urge you to go see Coming Out, if you haven't seen it already. And if you have, I'm sure you'll want to see it twice. It's being put on by the Gay Activists Alliance, and the performances are at 8 p.m. tomorrow night and every night at 8 through September 17th at the Washington Square Methodist Church, 133 West 4th Street. The contribution is $2, and I really urge you to go because I had a great time and we all gave them a standing ovation when they played at the Firehouse.
We're having a little after the concert meeting here in Carbondale, which is in southern Illinois, and I'm talking to some of the women from the university here. Want to give your names, or whatever names you feel free to give?
Sure. Karen Morosco, Gay Liberation.
Susan.
Marianne.
Are you both involved with Gay Liberation here, too?
No, I'm not.
I am.
I was wondering, you know, how Gay Liberation got started here, because from what I see, the town as a whole seems to be pretty conservative.
Yeah, that's about right. Gay Liberation started on this campus last spring, so we're just a year old. And it was begun by men on the campus, and shortly thereafter, I became a member of it or associated with it. Right now, we don't seem to have too much female support on the campus, however, although there's certainly no lack of gay women in the town. I guess we have, you know, a common predicament here in the Midwest. We have a lot of apathy and a lot of closetiness on the parts of both men and women. So we're just trying to get it together and get a gay women's caucus together again.
Is there much women's liberation?
Well, there was. And people seem to, you know, be factionalizing a whole lot. And, you know, when it comes down to, like, dealing with each other, you know, people are into a lot of petty fights and stuff like that, you know. Personal things are not as, you know, are more important than the movement, it seems, in a lot of senses.
Well, I was going to add, there was a women's paper going down here that was really good and promising, Mountain Moving Day. There were three issues put out, and it seems that now it's sort of fallen apart. Maybe, would you like to talk about that?
Yeah. First of all, like, it was started with a lot of energy. A lot of the women, you know, that were in the movement down here thought, and people that weren't in the movement were into it, but it basically fell apart when certain people were designated as the leaders of the paper, and it wasn't, you know, the energy level was basically from maybe, three, you know, three or four individuals, and it got to a point where, you know, like, everyone figured those three or four individuals were going to hold it together, and they didn't want to be leaders at all. And everyone just wanted to contribute basically as equally as possible, but it just didn't happen that way. So the last issue was, like, the last two issues were put together rather haphazardly because people weren't really into as much, you know, solidarity or sisterhood as, you know, should be expected. But, you know, now it's basically defunct because, you know, there's just no energy.
What about the town itself? You know, it looks to me like a rather small university town. I don't know, I'm not sure how many students there are, how many townspeople.
There are approximately 25,000 students, and there are about 22,000 residents, and the town has been small for a very long time, and just recently started to expand because of the university, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that the people are very hostile towards the students. Their town is shot up like lightning, you know, and they feel that the students are responsible for their, anonymity in the community now, and they feel as though we're to blame for their pollution and their lack of personal contact with one another and everything that goes along with having a big town all of a sudden. So students are very well hated here.
Wow. Well, you know, coming over to this place in the plain, I saw all of these strip mines and strip mining going on. And it's the first time I've ever seen it, and it just looks awful, you know, even from the air. And then today, well, I might as well tell this story. Karen and I went out for a picnic, and we decided, well, the hell with all of our worries. We're going to get some May wine. We had some strawberries and apples and oranges and some crackers. Yeah. So we decided we'd go over to this lake and have our picnic and go for a swim. And we had a picnic, and we're making out in the grass, and we're all having a good time. We go over to... It was fantastic. It was, the only thing that was wrong was the mosquitoes, but, you know, we ate food. The mosquitoes got a little...
Share.
Share with the ecology. So we went over to the dam. They have a spillway there to go for a swim. And they put tar on the thing, because hippies used to sit on it, you said?
Oh, droves. All the freaks.
Oh,
they put tar on, like, the part where it's cement.
Mm-hmm.
No, keep the people off. You know, they don't want the people sitting there, you know.
What's the harm of somebody sitting there?
Well, we went up, we decided the hell with the tar, and we climbed up on top, figured we'd go take a swim, and we see, like, dozens of dead fish floating with their bellies to the top. And then we looked around real carefully, and there's all of this blue-green algae all over the place, all this horrible gunk. And when the, and we noticed, like, where the water falls over the spillway, it's making all of these suds, mm-hmm. you know, like tied in your washing machine.
Yeah, well, the reason why they have that is because Carterville dumps raw sewage right into the lake. Okay, you can see this stuff bubbling up from people's septic tanks out in Carterville. And, like, I don't know if I should say, is this going to be on the air?
Of course it's going to be on the air.
Oh, well, okay, I won't say anybody's name. But, like, a friend of mine was going to take this... Navy dye that they use, you know, they put the dye around people when they've they fall in the water and or mm-hmm. identify them so they can pull them out. He's going to throw this stuff into the John in Carterville and let it come out of the septic tank and, like, go into the water so people can see the little line going from the septic tanks into the water and, like, you know, to get people's consciousness up about what is happening to the lake because of people's irresponsibility concerning their waste disposal.
Well, I knew that if it was going to kill the fish, I shouldn't go into it. I'm glad I found out what it was.
There are quite a few fish in, what is the name of the Crab Orchard?
Oh, yeah.
There are quite a few fish in Crab Orchard.
There used to be quite a few fish in Crab Orchard. You should have seen what we saw.
The fish in Crab Orchard are numerous because they're always being supplied. You know, they have great fish hatcheries and they're putting new fish in all the time.
So it's artificial
supply.
Well,
yeah, it is a man-made
lake.
They're, this entire area, just, you know, most of the lakes are man-made.
They're
not going to be able to be doing this forever because there is this pollution problem. Like, and they're not clearing up the pollution problem. They're just putting more fish in. When the fish die, they put more fish in and more fish in and more fish in. You can still go fishing there and bring home a lot of fish. But,
well,
like,
thanks.
You can eat them, you know. The problem is a minuscule problem. It's like something that is happening as opposed to something that already has happened. This isn't Lake Erie, you know. This is Lake Michigan. This is a lake that is dying. This isn't a lake that is dead. And there is something you can do about it, you know. It's not irreprehensible.
Well, okay, but why do they blame it on the students?
Well, people in Southern Illinois have a tendency to blame everything on students.
The townies, they're called townies, and the students are very separate. It's two worlds that are overlapping here with very little understanding. And I'm sure that there are very many people in the town right now that are quite alienated, especially after the recent window breaking.
It wasn't as bad as last 70, was it?
Oh,
and
certainly
the window
not.
Window breaking this time wasn't anything like they had last time.
Yeah. The spirit was there, but...
Now, I'd like to get into that thing that happened on Bridge Street. I was telling Martha about the Bridge Street incident where they were throwing the tear gas bombs into those people's homes. Does anybody here know exactly what happened on Bridge Street? Anybody at all?
When was this
yeah.
area?
This was last year, 1970. Does anybody know what happened on Bridge Street?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them?
I wasn't there, so I probably shouldn't say anything about it because I don't want to get my facts wrong.
But why don't you tell the story?
Okay, I wasn't down here that year, and all that I know about it is what I saw in a testimonial that I read at a guy who was involved with the ACLU. And this character's testimony from what happened in the house was like, he said, we came over and we were having a small informal party. There was a record player going and so forth. And all of a sudden we heard the window break as something came into the house. And then somebody said, the pigs are out there. And there was a tear gas bomb in the living room. And then someone else said, they've thrown in tear gas, we have to get out of here. And people were covering up their mouths and eyes and so forth with handkerchiefs, and they said, if we go outside and give ourselves up, maybe they'll, you know, be merciful. So they went outside, and the police said to them,
and the National Guard, and the, also
there. It's terrible. They said, this is an illegal assembly. You are ordered to disperse. And they only said that once.
In their living room?
No,
yeah,
this is
just
how they
an
want.
Informal party, and they said it was an illegal assembly. And
the only way that you can get them to arrest somebody, you can have a legal assembly, an illegal assembly, what have you, inside your house, but you can't have it outside in the lawn. So you have to get the people out in the lawn. And like what they did was they got the people out in the lawn, they told them it was an illegal assembly, and they said, we were going to arrest you. So everybody got down on the floor or the ground, and then they were beaten. And all the police had masking tapes over their badges, and they had their faces concealed with gas masks. And this one character that was writing the testimony, he was lying there on the ground, and a policeman came up to him and started clubbing him, and his arm felt really strange, you know, like really hurt, and he figured he had a broken arm. And then they grabbed him and they put him in a squad car. I read this. This is something he wrote, and like everybody else's testimony, well, a little bit different, but it all correlated, you know. It was, everybody said about the same thing. In fact, the neighbors said the same thing, which is really, they were townies, and they said the same thing. And like they put this guy in the back of the squad car, and then this one policeman took off his gas mask and said something like, now we've got you, you know. And he said, I can't identify this man. And they took these boys to the
women there too. Yeah.
Oh my God. And they took these people down to the Carbondale police station, and the Carbondale police the sheriff or what, the police chief said, I'd like to gas you right here.
Nationalsozialisten, nur die besten Nationalsozialisten sind Parteigenossen.
And he had his picture taken with them, with their hands on the wall. All the people had their hands on the wall, and they were lined up against the wall. And he stood in front of them and got his picture taken so he could give it to his children. Can you dig that? Yeah, that's about it.
That's an interesting incident.
That was as a result to the riots last year, and basically the motives behind that were, you know, regular old fascism, repression of people that were...
What was it that they did wrong?
Well, they didn't do anything wrong. There were just a lot of them were members of, local, underground papers and stuff like that.
Wasn't it having to do with curfew or something?
No, it had nothing to do with that. They had some idea in their head that these people had something to do with starting the riots, and that wasn't true because there were more than I don't know how many people were there, but there were more than 12 people that went to Woody Hall and trashed everything downtown and everything else. It was just, basically, they wanted to be able to trash these people because they had been wanting to get them for a long time.
Yeah, I know. Like, my friend Sally saw the whole thing from her wash line. She was out there hanging up the wash, and she's a townie, and she described it exactly like the students would. I would, expect, the students would have their attitudes, and the police would have their attitudes over here, and that the townies would, maybe side with the police, as students are wrong. And she was a completely objective witness, and she said exactly what the people in the house said, that the police came in there and brutalized them.
Mm-hmm. Not only did they brutalize the individuals, but they went into the house and they broke everything that was important to
their
individuals.
Whole stereo system and everything.
They also broke people's glasses, things that they couldn't go without, smashed, pills and guitars. They went in with hatchets and did things like that.
And thus far there's been no action taken against the police?
The only action that was going to be taken was by the American Civil Liberties Union. And that was, thwarted because, it took a lot of money to do that, and people didn't have that money,
Well, the thing with the police was that nobody was there. No one on the entire Carbondale police force was there, and no one on the entire SIU security police force was there. They all said, I wasn't there.
So, in other words, all these people got arrested, but nobody was there to do it.
Yeah, nobody arrested them, but they were arrested. Mm.
I'm curious about how the townies and the police, maybe, react to gay liberation here.
Well, the only direct dealing we've had with the police has been an evening when we were invited as a group to speak with the police force. I personally didn't go because, personally, I just couldn't see it, especially being a woman and put in that situation of having these men's questions directed at me as just setting myself up there as a lesbian. But the men who went, and I must admit, they probably had a very conservative rap because, we have all kinds of people in our gay liberation down here, and it's quite a spectrum of political views. They said they thought it had been somewhat profitable in... maybe raising some of the, at least younger officers' consciousnesses about the situation in town. As a rule, we can be as free in terms of public affection as we want to be on the streets, just depending on where our own heads are at and how much harassment we're prepared to deal with, not particularly from police, but just from other students and people in the community. Some people I know do it all the time, walking around quite openly. As far as I know, there's only been one physical violence that has happened. Two friends of mine, two men, walk around arm in arm all the time, arms around each other, and they got a beer bottle tossed at them from out of the local pub over here where all the local student types hang out. Well, a certain segment, I shouldn't say all. Other than that, it's just a lot of culture shock for people, and they deal with it in different ways. But no real political hassle, other than our phones are tapped and things of that nature. I'm sure, they keep tabs on us.
Well, you were saying something earlier, or somebody was saying something about the Jesus freaks hassling people. What's with that?
Well, generally, the Jesus freaks, I suppose, nationally, are very against anyone's political involvement, and especially and including gay liberation. Well, of course, in their eyes, it's the whole unnatural rap all over again. And, yeah, generally they're very against us. What was that that happened that you were talking about, Susan?
About what?
The Jesus freaks and...
the other night?
Confront gay liberation.
Oh, it was funny. It was really funny. There was a big rap session at the university, and Martha was speaking, and some men were speaking, and it was really a good discussion. And after we were all leaving the hall, about 20 of us exited through these doors, and on the other side of the doors there was the local Jesus freaks, and they all had their guitars, and simultaneously, all together, they just started playing all the music. It was like, here come the sinners, let's, you know, turn them on to Jesus and tell them what's really happening. It was like, this is our chance to get those sinners, you know, and save their souls. It was really far out. I mean, they were so blatant about it that it was ridiculous.
In New York, we get the Socialist Workers Party, and here we get the Jesus Freaks.
All right. Well, we get the Socialist Workers Party. Well, we certainly do.
Be said on all sides. Well, we don't get too many Jesus Freaks at us in New York. I'm not sure whether it's a blessing or not.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first of a two-part interview with the gay women of Carbondale, Illinois. We'll be back next week with the second part, and perhaps some more of Mary Flowerpot, and God knows what will pop up in between. However, if you're free this Sunday, September 10th, it's Sisterhood Day. The Lesbian Liberation Committee of the Gay Activists Alliance will have small discussion groups and examine the various aspects of sisterhood, followed by a large discussion group composed of all the smaller ones. This is at the GAA Firehouse at 99 Worcester Street at 2 p.m. on Sunday. Don't forget the Lesbian Switchboard. If you're confused as to what's happening next, you'll really want to call the Lesbian Switchboard. Lesbian Switchboard is open Wednesday night through Saturday night. You can call at 924-4036. So if you're lost, need advice, or just want to know where the action is, call them. They also need money to finance their activities, to pay for the phone, to pay for ads in The Voice, and occasionally to finance a cup of coffee for the tired sisters who volunteer. So if you can help them out, either with services or money, send your money to the Lesbian Switchboard at 247 West 11th Street, New York, New York. If you want cheap food, go to the Lesbian Food Conspiracy, where you can get all kinds of organic and some not-so-organic food. That's 243 West 20th Street. It's a firehouse, the Big Red Women's Firehouse. And the Food Conspiracy meets every Wednesday from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. This coming September 13th, Wednesday, there's going to be a women's discussion of man-hating. It's only open to women at 6th Avenue and 11th Street, PS 41. You'll see it there. It's the only building on the block that looks like a schoolhouse. There is a $2 donation. And there will be women speaking on man-hating. Robin Morgan, Faith Ringgold, Jill Johnston, Michelle Wallace, Pat Mainardi, and Janet Bajan. So if you're free next Wednesday night, I'm going to be there, and I hope you're all there. This is Lesbian Nation, which was produced by me, Martha Shelley, Mary Flowerpot, with a little obscene assistance from Bill Taylor. Thank you and good night.